And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, another hot day, September 2nd. 245th day of the year, and leap years, 246th. 120 days remain till the end of the year. You know, it's been a interesting date in history. In 44 BC, Pharaoh Cleopatra VII of Egypt declared her son co-ruler as Ptolemy the 15th Caesarian. 44 BC, Cicero launched the first of his oratorical attacks on Mark Antony. He'll make 14 of them over the next few months. Then in 31 BC, the final war of the Roman Republic, Battle of Actium. Off the western coast of Greece, Octavian's forces defeat the troops under Mark Antony and Cleopatra. That, of course, led to Mark Antony's death and Cleopatra's, many say suicide. 1192, the Treaty of Jaffa is signed between Richard I of England and Saladin, leading to the end of the Third Crusade. 1649, the Italian city of Castro is completely destroyed by the forces of Pope Innocent X. That ended the Wars of Castro. 1666, the Great Fire of London breaks out and burns for 3 days. Destroys 10,000 buildings, including old St. Paul's Cathedral. 1752, Great Britain, along with its overseas possessions, adopts the Gregorian calendar. 1789, the Department of Treasury in the U.S. is founded. 1792, during what became known as the September Massacres of the French Revolution, rampaging mobs slaughtered 3 Roman Catholic bishops, more than 200 priests, and a lot of prisoners believed to be royalist sympathizers. Didn't make any difference what the truth was. Accusation equaled guilt. We have some of that today. 1806, a massive landslide destroys the town of Gaudau in Switzerland, kills 457. 1807, the British Royal Navy bombards Copenhagen with firebombs and phosphorus rockets to prevent Denmark from surrendering its fleet to Napoleon. 1856, the Tianjin incident takes place in Nanjing, China. 1862, Abraham Lincoln reluctantly restores Union General George B. McClellan to full command after General Pope's disastrous defeat at the Second Battle of Bull Run. McClellan, who was quite full of himself, said he would be happy to become dictator if it saved the Union. 1864, Union forces enter Atlanta. The day after Confederate defenders flee the city, ending the Atlanta campaign. 1867, Mutsuhito, Emperor Meiji of Japan, marries Masako Ichiho, known after that as Empress Shokin. 1870, Franco-Prussian War, Battle of Sedan. Prussian forces take Napoleon III of France and 100,000 of his soldiers prisoner. 1885, Rock Springs Massacre took place in Rock Springs, Wyoming. 150 white miners who were struggling to unionize so they could strike for better wages and working conditions attacked their Chinese fellow workers, killed 28, wound 15, and chased several hundred out of town. 1898, Battle of Omdurman. British and Egyptian troops defeat Sudanese tribesmen and establish British dominance in Sudan. 1901, Vice President of the United States, Theodore Roosevelt, utters the famous phrase, "Speak soft and carry a big stick," at the Minnesota State Fair. 1912, Arthur Rose Eldridge is awarded the first Eagle Scout Award to the Boy Scouts of America. 1935, the Labor Day hurricane, the most intense hurricane to strike the U.S., makes landfall at Long Key, Florida, kills at least 400. 1939, World War II, Following the start of the invasion of Poland the previous day, the free city of Danzig, now Gdansk in Poland, is annexed by Nazi Germany. 1945, the Japanese instrument of surrender signed by Japan and the major warring powers aboard the battleship Missouri in Tokyo Bay. The Missouri was the flagship of a fleet that was getting ready to land an invading army in Japan. 1945, Vietnam declares its independence, forms the Democratic Republic of Vietnam. 1946, the interim government of India is formed, headed by Nehru as vice president with the powers of a prime minister. 1957, President Diem of South Vietnam became the first foreign head of state to make a state visit to Australia. 1958, U.S. Air Force RC-130 shot down by fighters over Armenia when it strays into Soviet airspace while conducting a signals intelligence mission. All the crew members are killed. 1960, the first election of the Tibetan Parliament in exile. The Tibetan community observes this date as Democracy Day. 1963, CBS Evening News becomes U.S. Network Television's first half-hour weekly weeknight news broadcast, when the show was lengthened from 15 to 30 minutes. 1968, Operation OAU begins during the Nigerian Civil War. 1970, what is Operation OAU? It was a battle between the Nigerian 3rd Commando Division and Biafran 12th Division in modern-day southeastern Nigeria. It was an intermittent battle that may have resulted in over 25,000 deaths on both sides. Although the Biafran soldiers were outnumbered, they were able to retain control of Umuahia and eventually recapture the cities of Oweri and Aba. The in April of 1968, commander of the 3rd Marine Commando Division, General Benjamin Adekunle, began drawing up plans to invade the Biafran heartland and capture all remaining major cities. But sometimes the best laid plans just don't work out the way they think they're going to. 1970, NASA announces the cancellation of two Apollo missions to the moon. Apollo 15, and that designation is reused by a later mission in Apollo 19. 1984, 7 people shot and killed and 12 wounded in the Milpera massacre. Shootout between rival motorcycle gang, the Bandidos and the Comancheros in Sydney, Australia. 1985, Sri Lankan Civil War. Sri Lankan Tamil politicians and former MPs M. Alasundaram and V. Dharmalingam are shot dead. 1987, in Moscow, the trial begins for 19-year-old pilot Matthias Rust, who flew a Cessna airplane into Red Square in May. 1990, Transnistria is unilaterally proclaimed a Soviet republic. The Soviet president, Mikhail Gorbachev, declares that decision null and void. 1992, a 7.7 magnitude Nicaraguan earthquake affects the west coast of Nicaragua, with a disparity of half a unit. The tsunami earthquake triggered a tsunami that caused most of the damage and casualties, killed at least 116. Typical run-up heights were 3 to 8 meters. That's 9.8 to 26.2 feet. 1998, Swiss Air Flight 111 crashes near Peggy's Cove, Nova Scotia. All 229 people on board are killed. 1998, the UN's International Criminal Trial for Rwanda finds Jean-Paul Ekaasu, the former mayor of a small town in Rwanda, guilty of 9 counts of genocide. 2009, the Andhra Pradesh, India, helicopter crash occurred near Uttarakhand Hill, 40 nautical miles from Karnal, Andhra Pradesh. Fatalities included Y.S. Rajasekhara Reddy, the chief minister of the Indian state of Andhra Pradesh. 2010, Israel-Palestinian conflict. The 2010 peace talks are launched by the U.S. 2013, the Eastern Span replacement of the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge opens at 10:15 p.m. at a cost of $6.4 billion after the 1989 Loma Prieta earthquake damaged the old span. 2019, Hurricane Dorian, a Category 5 hurricane, devastates the Bahamas, kills at least five people. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays, Christian Feast Day, Epiphanius of Antioch and companions in the Syriac Orthodox Church, Agricola of Agrinon, Antonius of Palmyres, Brocard, Castor of Apt, Diomedes, Eleazar, Ayu, Ingrid of Sweden, Justice of Lyon, Margaret of Louvain, Maxima of Rome, Nonnosis, William of Roskilde, Democracy Day in Tibet, Independence Day, which is unrecognized in Transnistria, Independence Day, which is unrecognized in Artsakh, National Blueberry Popsicle Day in the U.S., National Day celebrates independence of Vietnam from Japan and France in 1945, and VJ Day, Victory Over Japan Day in the United States. Well, before we get started on our discussing of supernatural, you know, I don't often talk about issues, but there is a restaurant that I have loved since I first visited it when I was about 10, and I'm talking about Cracker Barrel. I went to the very first one, and we've enjoyed going there. But now, this last visit was an absolute... Now, there have been issues in the past. They had one manager who was God's gift to the world. But I called to place an order. And, of course, their app, you can order meals and pay for them. But we don't order meals. We get different things. And I offered to pay over the phone. And for the very first time, they refused to accept payment over the phone. I had to come into the store, according to the manager. No exceptions. Well, I have pulmonary disease with lung scarring, which is a permanent disability. I can't go into the store. And I explained that. Manager didn't care. Her way or the highway. Eventually, after about 15 minutes, the order was taken, and I said, well, I'll pay cash, and went down there. And young lady came out to the car, and I offered her the cash, and she said, well, the manager said she couldn't take it because the 10 feet between the back of my car and the store, she might be mugged and lose the money. Manager couldn't have that. Well, eventually, and I'd known the young lady that came out to the car for about 15 years there at Cracker Barrel. I finally got it paid for, finally got it home. What should have been a 15-minute visit turned out to be almost 45. And when I got home and opened the order, it was wrong. I called back to the store, asked to speak to the manager. She wouldn't talk because, like Ms. Cochran, who is the CEO, she's too important to talk to your customers. And I explained it to the young lady that was on the phone that the order was wrong, and basically her attitude was, I don't care. That's your problem. So I called a complaint in yesterday, or the day before, I think. And somebody was going to call me. Well, nobody did. So I called back today and wound up getting to the option where you could file a discrimination report. And basically, it was the problem was caused because of my disability. And when I tried to file that, the young lady just made it impossible. She asked me five times if I sure wanted to file the report. So I finally just gave up and hung up and called back to the customer service. And when they finally called me, I explained the situation, and she said, the woman that called me back said, "Well, you know, everybody's busy, and you think there was some discrimination? Well, nobody can call you. It has to go to the attorneys." I said, "Well, then delete that from what I just said. I don't want to talk to somebody." "Well, I can't do it." "Well, let me talk to Ms. Cochran, who's the CEO. Sandra Cochran's her name." Well, I was led to understand she's much too important to talk to a mere customer. Now, I'm one of those who pay her salary, but she's much too important. And when I said, "Are you telling me I can't?" She said, "Yep, gotta go," and hung up. Now, is that any way for a company to treat its customers? Apparently, that's how Cracker Barrel likes to do things. And I'm going to continue to hammer on that on this show until somebody decides they're not too important to talk to a paying customer. Though I doubt I'll be going back anytime soon because they don't want business. They'd rather have managers who strut around and tell you how important they are. Well, the topic we're talking about today is methods of divination. In other words, foretelling the future. Now, there's a number of ways that that's done. One is Ouija board. And I'm sure we've all, at one time or another, used a Ouija board. And although it looks like something from a mysterious ancient era, the Ouija board actually began as a $1.50 novelty game marketed to an entire family starting in about 1890s. Players place their fingers on a teardrop-shaped device called a planchette and marvel as it moves all by itself over the words yes and no and letters and numbers. Researchers attribute the phenomena to the ideomotor effect in which the subconscious causes the muscles to act. But then again, maybe something else is causing the movement. How about palmistry, also called chiromancy? Telling people's fortune by reading the shapes of hands and the lines has been practiced for millennia by a lot of cultures. It probably began in India. And although the entire hand is studied, modern palmists give the most importance to the heart line, the head line, and the lifeline, using them to interpret a person's health and romantic and economic futures. Now, years ago, I guess I was about 16, my father bought a motel in Florida. And the motel had several separate cottages. One was rented by a gypsy family. And the daughter, who was cute as a button, could read palms and she used a deck of ordinary playing cards to foresell the future, and a lot of what she told me that I wrote down has come to pass. I'm amazed. In fact, my wife that I've been married to for 30 years, she described her, which was very surprising. Another way the future is seen is through tea leaves. It's kind of like interpreting patterns in coffee grounds, wine sediments, and splatters of molten wax and lead. The art of tassiography, or reading of tea leaves, began when tea came to England from China. A reader looks at the dregs of loose-leaf tea for shapes and patterns that speak to a person's past, present, and future. And I've watched it done. In fact, there were some places in New York City. They were called tea rooms, where you could have tea and then they would look at your future. Then there's the crystal ball. The ancient Egyptians, Persians, Chinese, and Native Americans all stared into crystals for divine inspiration. But the first recorded use of spherical objects was by the Druids of Britain, Ireland, and Gaul, who would fall into a trance-like state as they gazed into a polished ball made of mineral called beryl. image of women in bangles and scarves for telling fortunes over a crystal ball began with traveling carnivals in the U.S. and in Europe. Then there's tarot cards, which I've had people do for me quite often. When linked to ancient Egypt and India and the teachings of the Kabbalah, the tarot deck originated in northern Italy in the late 14th, early 15th century. It was for a game called Tarocchi. The fanciful images like the Fool and the Death were inspired by carnival costumes. It was renamed Tarot as the game spread across Europe, and they weren't used for mystical purposes until the late 18th century. Kind of like using an ordinary deck of playing cards to foretell the future, tarot cards became synonymous with foretelling the future. And then there's a number of other interesting ways to predict the future, if you don't have any tarot cards handy. One is anthropomancy, looking at the entrails of dead or dying humans, often virgin females who've been sacrificed. A number of ancient cultures used to do that. Gastromancy, listening to stomach noises. Now, that's definitely going to tell you what the future is going to hold, at least in the next hour. Aphalomacy, determining how many children a woman will have based on the markings of her newborn navel. Onychomacy, watching how the light plays off oil fingernails. Gyromancy, finding inspiration by walking in circles until collapsing from dizziness. And tyromancy, observing cheese as it coagulates. Well, that's one that I would sit up nights waiting to see work. When my show first began, I had a lot of psychics come in. The best one was a local man who was so accurate he was scary. And certainly he caused a lot of people a great deal of concern. You know, this day and time, astrology is more popular than ever. Even before the coronavirus pandemic, the zodiac was enjoying its biggest resurgence since the 1960s, when Linda Goodman's Sun Signs was a bestseller. According to astrologist Chaney Nicholas, there's something that's happened in the last 5 years that's given astrology an edginess, a relevance for this time and place. And that something was the millennials and the internet. No longer the stuff of newspaper columns back near the funny pages. Astrology is tailor-made for the internet. Ripe for snappy memes, pithy tweets, and online discussions, and endless explorations down information rabbit holes. Astrologers were in high demand with readings online and in person while their books were selling like crazy. For young adults, it was hip to have your head in the heavens. Well, when coronavirus engulfed the world, astrologists, like every other business, sank into the doldrums because stay-at-home orders and social distancing. People are traumatized, too terrified to ask what the future holds, according to astrologer Karen Thorne. She charges $325 an hour for a reading. Now people are starting to come out of the woodwork because they feel safer. They all want to know about their life. What does the future hold? Work, relationships, money, the usual stuff. From the first time people started looking into the heavens, they found meaning in the alignment of stars and planets. Not a science by any accepted definition, but astrology does conform to a set of rules and helps give order and meaning to a confusing world. Even non-believers can tell you what their zodiac sign is. But it's the darker hours when the stars seem to shine the brightest. Daniel Defoe could have been writing an op-ed in today's paper when he observed the people were more addicted to prophecies and astrological conjurations, dreams and old wives' tales than they ever were. Instead of the COVID-19 pandemic, he was discussing the outbreak of the bubonic plague in 1665. Well, there's no limitations to class. After the assassination attempt on her husband, First Lady Nancy Reagan turned to astrologist Joan Quigley for advice on President Reagan's schedule. She told Quigley, I'm scared every time he leaves the house. Well, facing widespread mockery, the Reagans tried to downplay Quigley's influence, but the astrologer insisted she did play a big role. She said, I was responsible for timing all press conferences, most speeches, the State of the Union addresses, the takeoff and landings of Air Force One. She wrote a 1990 memoir called What Does Jones Say? The connection to the first family made Quigley a celebrity, though after the Reagans left the White House, her fame kind of faded away. She died at the age of 87 in 2014. Wonder if she knew when it was going to happen. Well, let's talk about ghosts and poltergeist and demonic possession. We're talking floating phantoms and visits to the most haunted places in the world. Well, if you've seen a scary apparition, you probably won't be alone. According to one poll, 42% of Americans believe in ghosts, and the numbers are even higher in Europe and Asia, which is why haunted tours and paranormal TV shows thrive. What you may think of as a ghost may not be one at all. Ghosts are usually defined as disembodied beings tied forever to their location of their death, particularly if their passing was a violent one. So they return to settle unfinished business. Spirits, on the other hand, are said to be the personalities or souls that outlast the human body. They can pop up anywhere, usually summoned by a powerful emotion, and so they're rather more common. Either way, a lot of people have seen or felt something ghostly. In fact, close to 30% of Americans report experiencing some sort of paranormal event. You know, there's a number of spirits that make regular appearances at the White House. John Adams' wife, Abigail, darts about in a cap and shawl, leaves a scent of lavender in her wake. Thomas Jefferson plays his violin. Andrew Jackson lets obscenities fly. And Dolly Madison protects the rose garden she planted in the 1800s. But quite frankly, the most well-documented phantom is that of Abraham Lincoln. Spotted by none other than a naked Winston Churchill. During an overnight visit to the White House, the British Prime Minister came out of the bath stark naked and found Honest Abe standing there looking at him. And then I think it was Queen Wilhelmina of the Netherlands also had an encounter with him. Well, in the 17th century, a storm-battered ship called the Flying Dutchman was attempting to navigate into a harbor near South Africa's Cape of Good Hope, but couldn't locate a pilot ship and drifted away in the churning seas. The crew was never seen again, at least not alive. For centuries, the Flying Dutchman has been spotted as a ghost ship around the world, including coming up the Hudson River in New York, emerging from the fog and shadows, and then vanishing. Sailors, of course, consider its appearance a bad omen, signaling forthcoming storms or fatal accidents. And a lot of writers have been fascinated with her, with the doom ship making cameos in everything from Pirates of the Caribbean movie to Scooby-Doo. And, you know, one reason for Lincoln continually coming back, it seems he shows up whenever he feels the company's in need or in peril. And although called an urban legend, driver picks up a hitchhiker who then disappears from the car. And that story predates the internal combustion engine and is heard in cultures around the world. The New Testament tells about the Ethiopian in a chariot picking up the Apostle Philip, who vanishes after performing a baptism. Later travelers would dematerialize from horses and wagons, and the most common version told today, the hitchhiker is usually a girl or young woman asking to be dropped off at a certain address. When they arrive, she's gone, and the driver finds out that she's long been dead. Let's talk about Margaret de la Pole, the many ghosts that haunt the Tower of London. Anne Boleyn wanders around without her head. Two young boys who were murdered shiver in their nightshirts. But the most terrifying is that of Margaret de la Pole. Sister of two kings, de la Pole was sentenced to death when she refused to genuflect for a third king, Henry VIII, but her execution went a little off-key, so to speak. Chased around the scaffold and hacked apart piece by piece in front of a horrified crowd, she died a slow, gruesome death, and her screams have been heard echoing through that old castle ever since. And of course, one of the more famed is that of the Bell Witch. There's a cave in rural Tennessee that's home to the legendary witch who tormented the Bell family of the 1800s with spooky nocturnal noises that intensified the beatings and finally the poisoning of the family patriarch, John Bell. She kept the household in turmoil, assaulted Bell, and drove off Betsy Bell's suitor, according to a historical marker near the Bell's former home. But the Bell Witch also had a maternal side. Child crying out for help when he got lost while playing in the 500-foot-long cave on the Bell Farm heard a voice saying, "I'll get him out." And hands then pulled the boy to safety, and a disembodied voice lectured the child on the dangers of cave exploration. Certainly, there's a lot of stories of things of that nature. Let's talk about Bloody Mary, another urban legend. Legend has it if you chant Bloody Mary 13 times in front of a mirror, a ghostly corpse, sometimes covered in blood and sometimes holding a dead baby, will appear in the reflection. According to Snopes, Mary's a witch who was executed 100 years ago, or else a woman whose face was mutilated when she died in a car accident. There's a similar story told about the ghost of a young girl who haunts a school bathroom. And we do love a good ghost story. Kids giggled to a friendly ghost named Casper and spent hours in the arcade with the whimsical ghost of in Pac-Man. Moviegoers cowered from the ghost in the Poltergeist films, swooned over Patrick Swayze's spirit and ghost, and laughed and shuddered at a Slimer, the big green blob in Ghostbusters. Harry Potter's author, J.K. Rowling, gave us spirits including Moaning Myrtle. Ghosts float through several of Shakespeare's plays, most famously in Hamlet. But one of the best known is the hat trick pulled off by Charles Dickens with the Ghost of Christmas Past, Present, and Future, who visited Ebenezer Scrooge in A Christmas Carol. Certainly, it's interesting when you consider that some places that have been inhabited for eons seem to have something present, and others don't. The house I grew up in, the original part was built in 1815, and I was always seeing and hearing strange things. Well, let's talk about the most haunted places in the world. The Stanley Hotel's one. It's the scare that gave Stephen King the creeps. The best-selling horror novelist was suffering a bad case of writer's block when he and his wife checked into the Rocky Mountain Resort in Estes Park, Colorado in the 1970s. It was the off-season. There was snow on the ground. It was nearly empty. The strange noises and frightening vibes inspired King to write the blockbuster The Shining. Adapted into the popular 1980 movie with Jack Nicholson axing a door as he snarls, "Here's Johnny." Then there's Easton State Penitentiary. Inmates who broke the rules in this Philadelphia fortress, which was built in 1829, were plunged into icy water baths, chained to the wall, and clamped into an iron gag. And those who didn't succumb to disease, suicide, and murder went mad in this solitary confinement-only prison. Which may explain an eerily disembodied voice that's been heard by many to moan, "I'm lonely." Prisoners were forced to wear hoods when they left their cells to prevent them from talking to other inmates. Supposedly, this solitary confinement was to give them time for reflection on their wrongs. Now, another spooky location is the Queen Mary, and I spent quite a number of days there while my wife was at a meeting. It's a 1,000-foot-long ocean liner that carried the rich and famous across the Atlantic in high style. But it now sits permanently docked in Long Beach, California. A hotel and a tourist attraction for visitors looking for a taste of the ship's glory days and ghost hunters seeking spectral visions. They can start with cabin B-340, where bed sheets are said to fly, the toilet flushes on its own, and a man's voice warns, "Gets out." This particular suite was locked up for years, but it can now be rented for the night. Prices begin about $499. Other rooms are much more reasonable, and they let me wander the place. In fact, they gave me a guide to keep me from getting lost, because you can get lost. Well, let's talk about the Bangar Fort. 17th century fortress in India. Bars all visitors after twilight and before sunrise, with signs threatening legal action against violators. These warnings come from a legendary curse cast on the fort hundreds of years ago by a lovesick wizard after his romantic overtures toward a princess were rudely rebuffed. Even during the day, tourists report a strange feeling of anxiety and restlessness, in the sense that somebody or something is watching them from the shadows. Or you could wander through the catacombs of Paris. In the darkness beneath the city of light lurks a maze of tunnels and rooms filled with the skulls and bones of 6 million Parisians who are assembled in macabre sculptures and stuffed into every nook and cranny of the limestone. Starting about in the early 1700s, the French brought their dead to these catacombs to relieve old overcrowded cemeteries. The last body was interred there in 1859. Now, while only a tiny portion of what is said to be 186 miles of caves are open to tourists, cataphiles, as they're called, wander into the prohibited sections to have parties and explore. Two teenage boys were rescued from the catacombs in 2017 after being lost inside them for 3 days. And you can certainly get lost. Well, let's talk about Alcatraz. Once the final stop for the baddest of the bad, this federal penitentiary in San Francisco Bay closed in 1963. But the ghost of the inmates who didn't survive their stay on the Rock. Yep. I don't know why people like to play phone games. As I say, the ghost of the inmates who didn't survive the Rock, and there were a number of those. There were 8 murders, 5 suicides, and 12 were killed in escape attempts. And these dead can still be heard banging doors and crying out. One of the most famous prisoners, Al Capone, was so traumatized by his time there, he spent his days cowering in his cell or numbly strumming his banjo. And you can still hear that sound echoing through the cell blocks. It said there was a prison band, and Al Capone played the banjo. You know, what we know as Alcatraz actually began as a fort to protect the harbor of San Francisco. And over time, it became what we know it as the proverbial prison. How about Perviglia Island? Place of pain and refuge, this tiny island in the lagoon between Venice and Lido in Italy, became a quarantine colony during the 14th century plagues. In this location, the sickest victims were burned to death on giant bonfires. Centuries later, an asylum was built here for mentally ill patients, some of whom were possibly subjected to strange experiments in 1930. Though now it's abandoned, it's thought that a curse has fallen over the island. Locals and tourists alike are prohibited from visiting. Then, of course, we have the Lizzie Borden House. And you can spend the night in this Victorian home in Fall River, Massachusetts. For those that are not familiar with Lizzie Borden, she is said the woman who's said to have killed her mother with 40 whacks. And when she'd seen what she had done, she killed her, she gave her father 41. This happened August 4th, 1892. One of the most sensational axe murders in history. Now a bed and breakfast, which is said to have quite the creepy atmosphere. It's the boarding house is said to receive regular visits from Lizzie, who actually had been acquitted of the murder, but was ostracized by neighbors who were convinced she'd gotten away with murder. And there are those that say she was certainly a sandwich or two short of a full picnic. Let's talk about things that go bump in the night, otherwise known as poltergeist. The most terrifying of all the ghosts, poltergeist, seeth with anger. Their name means noisy spirit in German, and they live up to that label by slamming doors and setting fires and smashing walls and turning television and appliances, other appliances on and off, and often in an enclosed environment like a house or an office. They catch people off guard because their rage builds up slowly. The change is so subtle that only the household cat or dog picks up on these emotions. They start by fixing their stare at them or scratching the floor. In the first Poltergeist movie in 1892, a young girl famously welcomes them with the line, "They're here." Then comes the little sounds, a bump in the attic, a clanking pipe, a squeaking baseboard, accompanied quite often by strange smells. The activity may be died down on its own or escalate to the main event, a horrifying spectacle of flying furniture and spontaneous combustion that can end as quickly as it begins, only to simmer in the background and reappear without warning. Some people claim they spent much of their lives with poltergeists, treating them like temperamental, unwelcome house guests. One paranormal investigator named Paul Eno said the drapes in the living room kept falling to the floor and the portable TV there turned around. Some poltergeists, in fact, are considered benign, the so-called friendly poltergeists, more mischievous than destructive, but they're all invisible, manifested only by the things they move and the odors they generate. According to PsychicElements.com, poltergeists aren't ghosts at all in the technical sense, but actually active kinetic energy that causes physical disturbances. And they feed off the emotions of somebody in the room. There was a teenager in Nova Scotia who claimed to be tormented by a dangerous poltergeist. Said the spirit's behavior got worse when the girl, who was 18, was prescribed sedatives. That's why the remedy is not exorcism performed by a priest, because they're really evil spirits, but instead involves soothing words and maybe mental health counseling. Paradoxically, fear powers the poltergeist. So the best thing to do when the refrigerator's soaring across the kitchen is just simply to remain calm. And of course, as if they exist at all. Scientists say there's no such thing as poltergeist, but the scientists aren't there to see what happens. And any supposed evidence can be attributed to natural phenomena like unusual air currents and earth-shaking groundwater flows, memory lapses, mental disorders, drug-induced hallucinations, and when all else fails, they declare it's a hoax. Well, the only thing scarier than the three poltergeist movies is the supposed curse that befell the cast, attributed by some to the fact that star Jo Beth Williams is forced to fall into a pool of real skeletons instead of plastic ones. Seems the fake skeletons were too expensive. That was followed by one tragic death after another, starting with the murder of 22-year-old Dominique Dunn, who played the eldest daughter. That happened just 5 months after the first movie debuted in June of 82. Native American actor Will Sampson performed a secret late-night exorcism on the set of the sequel, only to die of cancer at 53, a year after the film came out. Most shocking death was that of little Heather O'Rourke, who said the famous line, "They're here." At age 12, she succumbed to a misdiagnosed intestinal problem prior to the release of Poltergeist 3. If not for the movies, would she have had that medical problem? Then we have items that are said to be cursed. These are items that you can look at, but you shouldn't touch. And while you'd expect to find ghosts and spirits in old houses and abandoned hospitals, sometimes evil is said to lurk in everyday objects. From ordinary-looking dolls or an exotic gem. Forget raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. These are some of the scariest things. We may have mentioned earlier in a previous show about the crying boy prints. Mass-produced prints to the 1950s painting by the Italian artist Bregolin of a weeping toddler gained notoriety because of their supposedly eerily fireproof qualities. They escaped unscorched from otherwise devastating house fires in the 1980s. No fears grew that the prints themselves caused the fires. A BBC program concluded the prints had been coated with a fire-retardant resin. Of course, keep in mind that without finding a solution, there wouldn't have been a TV show. Well, there's a walnut-sized blue diamond that weighs more than 45 carats and worth about $250 million. This particular jewel reportedly brought murder, suicide, drug addiction, divorce, and financial ruin to generations of owners. Although it looks like the curse itself was concocted by the 19th century newspapers. After passing through a lot of rich hands, including its namesake, London banker Thomas Hope, who it said suffered no ill effects, the diamond is now housed in the National Museum of Natural History in Washington. Harry Winston donated it. He's a jeweler in New York City. Well, we've seen a lot of movies that deal with demonic possession. You know, the question of whether or not there is such a thing defies all explanation. The devout are suddenly repulsed by all things holy. They kick and they thrash and they foam at the mouth. Furniture flies, beds shake. Some say the only explanation is that Satan has invaded the body. It's all very cinematic, which is why demonic possession is a favorite theme of horror movies. But the question is, are they real? Yeah, we've got some case studies we're going to talk about. How about Roland Doe, the pastor and family of a 14-year-old American boy known by the pseudonym Roland Doe? It's the character that the Exorcist was based on, though it was changed to a girl in that 1973 movie. But, as I say, the pastor and the family suspected he was possessed by the devil because his family claimed furniture would fly and vases would levitate around him. He spoke in a guttural voice and couldn't stand religious objects. During a series of exorcisms in the late 40s, the words evil and hell and an X appeared on his body. His mattress shook, he became violent, slashing the arm of one priest, breaking the nose of another. And then it all stopped. Some of the supposed eyewitness accounts may have been exaggerations or outright inventions. Others have suggested the boy suffered mental illness, aggravated by his grief over the death of his beloved aunt, who was a Ouija board playing spiritualist. And then there's Anna Eklund. Her first 14 years, Anna Eklund appeared to be a normal 19th century girl raised by a German Catholic immigrant father in Wisconsin. Her mother died when she was young. But after her 14th birthday in 1896, she changed. She refused to enter the church or take communion, became sickened at the thought of holy water, engaged in what was described as unspeakable sexual acts. Starting in 1912, she underwent several exorcisms over the next 14 years. During these exorcisms, she reportedly erupted into fits of rage, vomited tobacco leaf-like material, spoke in multiple languages, collapsed in bed, shrieked, "Hell, hell, hell." Now, as she aged, the fits subsided, suggesting it may have had less to do with Satan and more with a misunderstood teenage rebellion and possibly abuse by her father. Her story got the Hollywood treatment in 2016's The Exorcism of Anna Eklund. But a 2007 Gallup poll revealed that 70% of Americans believe in the devil. And not surprisingly, Catholic exorcisms are on the rise. Let's talk about Annalise Michel. In her teens and early 20s, this German woman stopped entering churches because the ground under her feet burned like fire. She hallucinated, heard voices that told her she was damned and would rot in hell, and suffered seizures. Diagnosed with epilepsy and depression, she didn't respond to psychiatric medication, and the family became convinced she was possessed by the devil. 1975, when she was 24, she underwent a brutal year-long exorcism to purge her of the dark forces, but instead, it left her malnourished and dehydrated. She actually died in 1976, severely underweight with pneumonia and broken knees from constant genuflecting. Her parents and two priests were found guilty of negligent homicide and sentenced to 6 months jail terms that were reduced to 3 years of probation. Her tale is the basis for the 2005 film, The Exorcism of Emily Rose. You know, it's been one comment that I have made throughout these shows that religious fanaticism is probably more prevalent than demonic possession. Well, let's talk about UFOs and alien encounters. For over 10 years, I spoke at Roswell until the dilettantes gained control and it became politically unacceptable for me to be there. See, my crime was my books outsold everyone else's, so I had to go. Well, Roswell, of course, is the most famous UFO event. In 1947, a rancher discovered strange debris, foil, heavy glossy paper, chunks of plastic, and strange metal sticks wrapped in tape scattered across his sheep pasture outside of Roswell. After reporting it to Roswell Army Air Force Base, Major Jesse Marcel came out. The local newspaper reported RAAF captures flying saucer on ranch in Roswell region. Next day, the Army clarified that. They said it came from that material came from a weather balloon and a reflective kite used for radar tracking. For decades, conspiracy theorists accused the government of an elaborate cover-up of a crashed spaceship. And in the 1990s, officials admitted they had in fact not told the whole truth. And because of that, anything they said after that wasn't believed either. Let's talk about the mysterious face on Mars. As the Viking 1 spaceship circled Mars in 1976, seeking landing sites for its sister craft Viking 2, it snapped a photo of what looked exactly like a human face, 2 miles long in a region of the planet known as Cydonia. Was this the remnant of some ancient civilization on the Red Planet? NASA says what the photo actually shows is a Buter Mesa with clouds and shadows giving the formation lifelike qualities, as evidenced by a new round of sharper images taken by the Mars Global Surveyor Clear Aft in 1998. Richard C. Hoagland said that there were no new pictures taken, that in fact NASA has made it a point to avoid Sedona, or Cydonia. Well, another strange location is Bermuda Triangle. Ever since Christopher Columbus encountered inconsistent compass readings, that infamous part of the Atlantic Ocean bound by Miami, Bermuda, and Puerto Rico has had a reputation for strange and fatal phenomena. Dozens of planes and ships reported to have been swallowed whole, often in good weather, without so much as an SOS. Most famous involved a routine training mission off the coast of Florida in December 1945. When the patrol leader of the five bombers, known as Flight 19, became convinced both his compasses were broken. Anxious and disoriented, he led the squad to places unknown. When he didn't return, another plane went out looking for him. It vanished as well. An official investigation came up with no plausible explanation. One military official wrote it was as if the planes flew off to Mars. And some folks have taken that statement literally. And the mission was dramatized in a 1977 movie, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Others have blamed these events on sea monsters, time warps, gases bubbling up from the ocean floor, magnetic anomalies, ghosts, extraterrestrials. Scientists suggest more straightforward explanation: storm, pile of air, and mechanical breakdown. They note the Bermuda Triangle contains the busiest shipping lanes and flight paths in the world. And they say no more craft are lost here proportionally to any place else. In fact, Lloyd's of London, the insurance company, didn't even list the Triangle as a dangerous place. But I wouldn't want to go there for a vacation. Let's talk about McMinnville. McMinnville, Oregon. UFO mania was flying high after the Roswell account when Evelyn Trent was feeding her rabbits on May 11, 1950. She happened to look into the skies and saw a slow-flying metal disc heading toward their farm in McMinnville, Oregon. She called her husband, Paul, who grabbed his camera and captured what a ufologist described as one of the most famous UFO photos of all time. Published in Life magazine, the pictures are called faked. Mocked and called liars, the Trents were soured by the experience. Evelyn later told the Oregonian if she ever saw another flying disc, she wouldn't take a picture on a bet. Of course, it's easy to make allegations. It's much harder to prove them. How about the Warminster Thing? An eruption of unexplained phenomena in the skies over a small English village. Starting on Christmas night, 1964, and stretching for several nerve-wracking months, residents reported loud explosions, a giant orange flame that hissed through the heavens. More than 50 years after that, there have been additional reports of crop circles, eerie sounds, and sightings of balls of light and objects shaped like cigars and saucers. Cars that won't start, pigeons that would mysteriously die, even a grainy photo reported showing a flying saucer over the town. Well, Warminster has been called the UFO capital of England, and they embrace that title. Village even commissioned a mural about the Warminster Thing on the side of the old police station. Then we have the Bermuda Triangle of Romania. A grove of crooked black trees that draws visitors hoping to experience weird, unexplainable events, including floating light orbs and strange sounds. Legends talk about ghosts hiding among the trees, an entire flock of sheep vanishing. A little girl disappeared one day and came back 5 years later, alive, well, and clueless as to what happened. Some have called the forest a gateway to another dimension. Compasses spin and visitors overcome a sudden anxiety or burning skin. Other theories link the Hoya Basia forest to extraterrestrials. There was a grainy 1968 black and white photo taken by hikers of a shimmering saucer hovering over the treetops. And then there is Marfa, Texas. First reported sighting of the Marfa lights came in 1883 when a cowhand claimed he saw flickering lights. Locals thought it was Apache raiding parties and campfires. This quirky art community in West Texas glows with pride over its reputation for UFOs lighting up the sky. In fact, the town sponsors an annual Marfa Lights Festival with food and a parade, and there's an official Marfa Lights website and a Marfa Lights viewing area 9 miles outside of town. There, from Route 90, people gather to gaze east over the Chinati Mountains to catch a dazzling display of bouncing yellow orbs, streaks of blue, zigzagging pink and yellows. Marfa lights have been attributed to UFOs, the paranormal, or witches learning to fly. During World War II, there was an air base there for training, and the powers that be thought these were Nazis hiding in the desert. So whenever they would see these lights, they would bomb them with sacks of flour so they could come back and check the places the next day. Never found anybody. Well, once again, we're out of time. We'll be back and talk more about alien encounters and abductions tomorrow. But until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.